Welcome to the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com, your daily morning podcast, updating you on everything you need to know to win your fantasy baseball league. Here's your host, Jake Crumpler.
What's up, fantasy managers? Welcome back to another episode of the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. My name is Jake Crumpler, and I'll be your host for this edition of the pod. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler and can find all of my work at CrumplerBaseball.com. Let's dive into everything baseball related from Monday, July 27th. We'll start it off, as always, with the transactions, injuries, news, and notes from around the league, kicking things off with the bad news as outfielder Kerry Carpenter was placed on the 10-day IL with plantar fasciitis. The timeline for Carpenter's return is unclear, though. We don't expect it to be very long, maybe 2 to 4 weeks. Players will filter through the DH role that Kerry Carpenter vacated with his injury, allowing Colt Keith, Gleyber Torres, and Hao-Yu Lee to see everyday playing time despite competing for playing time at second base and third base, because each of those guys will be able to shift through the DH role and other players won't prevent them from finding playing time at their respective positions. Catcher Eduardo Valencia was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. And lastly, second baseman Spencer Steer was placed on the 10-day IL with a partial tear of the wrist tendon of the tendon sheath in his wrist. Steer will wear a splint for the next 2 weeks, which means no baseball activities for 2 weeks for Spencer Steer, but the hope is that he avoids surgery. However, he's due for some form of an extended absence, likely at least 4 weeks, as he'll need to get back up to speed after he takes off that splint. So probably 4 to 6 weeks, maybe 4 to 8 weeks for Spencer Steer. This is definitely an injury that puts his season in jeopardy at this point in the year. Second baseman Ivan Johnson was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move, but with Steer out, Edwin Arroyo, TJ Friedl, and Noel V. Marte should see more playing time for the Reds moving forward. In terms of transactions, starting pitcher Max Scherzer was activated from the 15-day IL to start in Washington against his former club. Scherzer has missed the past month and a half with back spasms, and in his return, he tossed 2 2/3 innings, allowing 4 hits and 1 run, walking 3 while striking out 4, inducing 6 whiffs with 15% CSW across 75 pitches. And Scherzer was not limited in his return from the IL. He was just super inefficient, preventing him from completing even 3 frames. Scherzer went sub-60% strikes overall and failed to fool batters to induce whiffs or steal strikes, leading to the 15% CSW, as well as deep counts and long at-bats. I think Scherzer could become a streaming option later in the year. He's also a possible trade candidate in the next week, but we're going to have to see him prove that he is worth streaming after he's pitched to a 9.49 ERA through 7 starts this season. Reliever Braden Fisher was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. Next, catcher Endy Rodriguez was activated from the 10-day IL after missing the past 3 weeks with a glute strain. Rodriguez did not start in his return to the majors, but he's likely on the strong side of a catching platoon with Henry Davis on the Pirates. Catcher Sean Ross was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. And in the other Pirates news, they acquired reliever Jonathan Rodriguez via trade from the Orioles in exchange for cash considerations. Next, outfielder Everson Pereira was activated from the 7-day IL after missing a month and a half with a concussion. Pereira will be on the short side of a center field platoon for the White Sox. Outfielder Junior Perez was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. Next, starting pitcher Jameson Taillon was designated for assignment following the acquisition of Aaron Civale. And I guess the Cubs just have too much pitching at this point, though I prefer Taillon over Civale and likely rotation entry Javier Assad. This move does set up Taillon to be traded before the deadline, and maybe that's the thought. The Cubs feel that they can replace Taillon pretty effectively with Civale and Javier Assad, but Taillon, I guess, isn't too much of a difference maker for this club at the moment. Maybe they can shift around their priorities, get a reliever in exchange for Taillon. Reliever Andrew Wance was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. And lastly, outfielder Ronald Acuna Jr. was activated from the 10-day IL after missing the past month and a half with a hamstring strain. Acuna will return to being the leadoff hitter and everyday right fielder for the Atlanta Braves, taking time away from outfielder Mike Yastrzemski, who will see more playing time at DH, but he'll see his overall playing time decrease as he's likely to split some duties versus right-handed pitchers with Dominic Smith at DH. Outfielder Brewer Hicklin was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. Now we can take a look at our notable performances from Monday, a day in which we had just 11 games on the slate as the matchup between the Guardians and the Reds was postponed. It'll be made up today via a doubleheader. We'll start it off with our hitters, leading off with shortstop Francisco Lindor, who helped the Mets to win against the Braves, going 3-for-5 with 2 runs, a triple, 2 home runs, 6 runs batted in, and a walk for good measure. He's up to 8 homers on the year now. The first one traveled 367 feet at 100 miles per hour, and the second one went 396 feet at 105 miles per hour. It's been somewhat of a lost season as Lindor missed 2 months with a calf strain and has struggled offensively when on the field entering this week with a 94 WRC plus, which was the lowest of his career. But Lindor started to turn things around with this big performance on Monday. His underlying metrics don't look much different than years past. And with his track record, you have to expect him to have a huge second half. So I'd be looking to buy low on Lindor everywhere. It may be difficult after this one, but there may be frustrated managers looking to offload him before the trade deadline. Next, DH Jock Peterson helped the Rangers to win against the Mariners, going 2-for-4 with 2 runs, 2 home runs, and 4 runs batted in. He's up to 19 homers now. The first one went 418 feet at 106 miles per hour, and the second one went 347 feet at 105 miles per hour. I sort of wrote Peterson off a couple months ago after a multi-homer game because his underlying metrics suggested he hadn't fully bounced back from 2025's underperformance. Well, he's proved me wrong by continuing to mash since then, looking like the power hitting DH we've come to know and love. Peterson's been one of the best hitters in baseball during those 2 months, batting 270 with 16 homers and a WRC plus north of 160, putting him in the top 10 in baseball in both homers and WRC plus during that time. And it's fully supported by StatCast as he's sporting a 15% barrel rate and a 50% hard hit rate. If not for his limiting positional eligibility, I'd say Peterson would be deserving of being rostered everywhere. He also doesn't really play against left-handed pitchers. He is the leadoff, but with just DH eligibility, there are definitely some leagues where I wouldn't be picking up Peterson, but I honestly, in my home league, I'm looking to pick him up after this outing. And lastly, second baseman Nico Hoerner helped the Cubs to win in St. Louis, going 4-for-5 with 2 runs, a home run, and 4 runs batted in. He's up to 5 homers now. The first one traveled 382 feet at 97 miles per hour. He only hit 1 home run. Hoerner has been a consistently above average offensive contributor throughout his career, but he's in the midst of his first full season sub-league average WRC+. He's never been known for hitting the ball hard, but he's taken a significant step back in his StatCast metrics with just 3 barrels all year. Hoerner is still an elite contact hitter with a 96 zone contact rate and an 8% strikeout rate, but a 266 BABIP has prevented him from producing in the batting average department. I'd expect that to regress throughout the second half, allowing Hoerner to finish with numbers in line with his career marks. Just don't expect a ton of power. But if you'd like a breakdown of other notable hitting performances from Monday, check out the Daily Batters Box article over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the mound and check out some notable starting pitching performances, opening with Peyton Tolley, who helped the Red Sox to a win in Sacramento, tossing 5 1/3 innings, allowing 5 hits and 2 earned runs, walking 1 while striking out 7. He induced 16 whiffs with 26% CSW across 90 pitches, and Tolley earned the gallows pole by leading baseball with those 16 whiffs. Tolley's trio of fastball variants dominated as usual, as each of them induced at least 4 whiffs while combining for 68% strikes. But what I liked the most was seeing Tolley cut back on four-seam fastballs a little bit as he decreased their usage by 8% to focus more on cutters, which he increased by 9%. And those cutters are really just mislabeled sliders as they come in 8 miles per hour slower than the heater. Regardless, his four-seamer is great, but I think he can become too predictable when he's throwing it half of the time, making him homer prone. And so the expansion of Tolley's arsenal allows him to keep batters off balance and increase the effectiveness of his four-seamer as it can catch them off guard more often. That pitch usage change has me confident starting Tolley in Hollywood up next. Tyler Mahle helped the Giants to win against the Brewers, tossing 6 shutout innings, allowing just 3 hits and 2 walks while striking out 3. He induced 5 whiffs with 32% CSW across 88 pitches. In what is likely to be Mahle's final start as a Giant before he's traded at the deadline, he displayed his abilities to prospective trade partners and interested teams. It wasn't overly dominant as he had just 5 whiffs, making him ultra reliant on batted ball luck, but The luck swung Molly's way as he returned 12 outs on 15 balls in play, thanks to 60% grounders and 60% weak contact, suggesting that he did deserve some of the fortunate outs in play. It also helped that the Brewers were ultra passive, allowing Molly to steal 14 called strikes with his four-seamer. The reliance on balls in play and called strikes is not the most sustainable approach, but it was promising to see Molly sit nearly two ticks up at a season-high 94.2 miles per hour on his fastball, hinting at more potential in his heater that maybe his future team will help unlock. Let's see where Molly ends up next week. And lastly, we have Walbert Urania, who helped the Angels. Actually, he did all he could, but the Angels lost to the Astros. Urania tossed six innings, allowing two hits and one run, walking one while striking out five. He induced 10 whiffs with 31% CSW across 91 pitches. And speaking of increased velocity, Urania showed up throwing nearly two ticks harder as well, sitting north of 99 miles per hour with his four-seamer and sinker. It allowed Urania to thrive in the zone with hitters that don't have the best shape, meaning that they can be hit around. His signature changeup was floated a bit too much, not landing below the zone as intended, but he wasn't punished as a result, and he dominated the Astros for six frames. Urania's sweeper is still coming together as the saving grace of an arsenal that feels like it's missing a whiff offering for right-handed batters. But regardless, Urania has been great all year with a 2.70 ERA through 19 starts. And if that added velocity sticks, he may not need better fastball shape or a more consistent sweeper. We are starting Urania everywhere versus the Brewers next. But if you'd like a breakdown of every single start from Monday, give the Plus Pitch podcast a listen and check out Nick's daily SP roundup over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the bullpen and check out the relievers that got saves and the closers that pitched outside of save situations or blew their saves. Starting with the former, Eric Miller pitched a perfect ninth for his third save as Caleb Killian lost the closer role for the Giants. Check in on the In the Pen podcast where Rick and I will talk about that possibility. You can listen to that live on Wednesday. Rico Garcia pitched a perfect ninth for his fifth save. We have a third entrant into the Baltimore Closer Committee alongside Andrew Kittredge and Tyler Wells. We got Rico Garcia now. Louis Varland recorded his 22nd save with a scoreless ninth. David Bednar got the final out of the game for his 21st save. Josh Hader had a hitless ninth for his 13th save. And Aroldis Chapman had a scoreless three-strikeout ninth for his 25th save of the season. And in terms of closers to pitch outside of save situations or blow their saves, Jacob Latz allowed a run while pitching the ninth up by five. Gregory Soto pitched a scoreless ninth in a tie game, and Mason Montgomery pitched a hitless 10th and earned his fourth win when the Pirates walked it off. Yoan Duran allowed three runs on five hits to blow his second save and take his fourth loss. And lastly, Jacob Webb pitched a scoreless ninth with a four-run lead after the Cubs added two insurance runs in the top half to ruin his save opportunity. But if you'd like more information on relief pitchers, check out Rick Graham's daily articles over on pitcherlist.com. And before you look forward to today's games, we're going to take a quick break. Now we'll look forward to Tuesday, July 28th, a day in which we'll have a full slate of 16 games as we'll see the Guardians and Reds partake in a doubleheader. My matchup of the day is Jake Bennett versus Gage Jump. We got a pair of southpaws who have looked pretty impressive this season, though they will get tough matchups in Sacramento. It's really the ballpark that makes it tough, though the Red Sox have been on fire recently and they do crush lefties, and Gage Jump is a lefty. I'm excited to see how these two young southpaws look in a tough environment. In terms of probable starters, we've got seven guys in the auto starts tier, including Chris Sale in Queens, Logan Henderson in San Francisco, and Garrett Cole on the south side of Chicago. Our probably starts tier has eight guys, and our questionable starts tier has seven, and that's where we'll find our streamer of the day in Colin Ray in St. Louis. He's a guy who is a very reliable streamer who can get you a quality start and a win against just about all the bottom half offenses. The Cardinals offense has been very cold recently, so Ray should have no problem there. I'd also keep an eye out for Gage Jump versus the Red Sox's rostership has dropped as he struggled recently, but I don't think the outlook on him has changed. I was never fully bought in on him, but that was mostly not being fully bought in on him as somebody that needs to be rostered and started universally in every single matchup that he has. Here against the Red Sox, it's not the best matchup for him in Sacramento against a lefty killing crew, but there also aren't that many streaming options here on Monday. In terms of hitters or Tuesday, excuse me. In terms of hitter suggestions, I target Marlins hitters versus Aaron Nola in Lone Depot Park. Nola has been prone to blowups this year. He's got a 5.82 ERA. I'd also target Guardians and Reds hitters in Great American Ballpark, as we'll see a doubleheader. The matchups are Gavin Williams versus Rhett Lauder, and the other one has yet to be announced, but I think it's going to be Slade Ciccone versus Chase Burns, which was the expected matchup yesterday. I'd also target Padres hitters versus Michael Lorenzen in Petco Park. Lorenzen has a 6.53 ERA on the season. And lastly, I target Red Sox and A's hitters in Sutter Health Park. We got the Jake Bennett gauge jump matchup again, but obviously this is just because of the fortunate ballpark there. Now we can close things out with our relievers to watch. Josh Hader has pitched in 3 of the past 4 days. So if the Astros want to give him the day off, Brian Abreu could get an opportunity at a save. And lastly, David Bednar has also pitched in 3 of the past 4 days. So if the Yankees elect to give him a day off, Fernando Cruz should be the top option for a save for the Yankees on Tuesday. But that'll do it for today's episode of the First Pitch Podcast. Make sure to head on over to pitcherlist.com to check out all of the great articles and features we have on the site. Sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro to gain access to the Discord and to support the Pitcher List staff. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler, where I do daily SP streamers and I break down every single start via the Pitcher List stats player cards. Tune into YouTube tomorrow and every day for a new installment of the podcast, and make sure to enjoy the day as we are blessed with another day of baseball.
This has been the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, rate us on iTunes, follow us on Twitter at PitcherList, and help support what we do by joining our Discord with PitcherList Plus at PitcherList.com/plus.